Hey, what is a mob? What is a mob? How do you define a mob?
Rowdy group of people.
Rowdy group of people. Any other definitions? Don't all speak up at once. Usually it's a large group too. You don't think of two people being rowdy as being a mob. It's probably a quantity of people. Lily?
Minecraft.
Minecraft mobs, but like the villagers and stuff like that. There you go, yeah. Oh, mod. Oh, I thought, yeah, mob. So in Kaiser Permanente, an MOB might be a medical office building. But we are talking about a mob and not an acronym. The Mac Dictionary, my Mac Dictionary says a large crowd of people, comma, so that's the fundamental, a large crowd of people, especially one that is disorderly and intent on causing trouble or violence. And it gives us an example, a mob of protesters. So you can see, technically, a mob could just be a large group of people. But I think we've all been in large groups before that we wouldn't call mobs. For instance, I went to the police at Fenway Park. That's definitely a large group of people, but I wouldn't call it a mob. Ditto for all the baseball games I went to at Fenway Park. Large group of people, but I wouldn't call it a mob. Mob generally has, would we agree, generally has a negative connotation. If you told somebody you were just in a mob, they wouldn't look at you and say, ooh, glad you did that, generally. Even if we drop the part of the definition where it says especially one that is disorderly and on, let's see how it says, and intent, I left this out here, and intent on causing trouble or violence, doesn't mob basically denote a group of people intent on something? It may not be bad, but when you think of a mob, it's not just a large group. It's a large group that gets together for a purpose of doing something, a purpose of doing something. And that's beyond watching a concert or a baseball game. Now, if you use the English Standard Version, the word mob only shows up twice, both in the book of Acts. The first is Acts 17:5, but we're going to look at verses 1 through 5. Acts 17:5 is the money verse, I guess you would say. But we're going to look at verses 1 through 5. And this kind of, you had noted earlier during Bible study, Deb, that you don't like a verse that starts a sentence halfway. I also don't like verses that are just totally out of context, especially if they're part of a narrative. So Acts 17, verses 1 through 5. Now, when they had passed through Amphipolis, is that how you say it, and Apollonia, they came to Thessalonica, where there was a synagogue of Jews. And Paul went in, as was his custom, and on three Sabbath days he reasoned with them from Scriptures, explaining and proving that it was necessary for the Christ to suffer and to rise from the dead, and saying, "This Jesus, whom I proclaim to you, is the Christ." And some of them were persuaded and joined Paul and Silas, as did a great many of the devout Greeks, and not a few of the leading women. But the Jews were jealous, and taking some wicked men of the rabble, they formed a mob, set the city in an uproar, and attacked the house of Jason, seeking to bring them out to the crowd. So that's the first case. Let's review the second case. Acts 21, that one's verse 36, but we're going to look at verses 30 through 36. Acts 21, verses 30 through 36. There? Then all the city was stirred up, and the people ran together. They seized Paul and dragged him out of the temple, and at once the gates were shut. And as they were seeking to kill him, word came to the tribune of the cohort that all Jerusalem was in confusion. He at once took soldiers and centurions and ran down to them. And when they saw the tribune and the soldiers, they stopped beating Paul. Then the tribune came up and arrested him and ordered him to be bound with two chains. He inquired who he was and what he had done. Some in the crowd were shouting out one thing, some another. And as he could not learn the facts because of the uproar, he ordered him to be brought into the barracks. And when he came to the steps, he was actually carried by the soldiers because of the violence of the crowd, for the mob of people followed, crying out, "Away with him!" In the English Standard Version's two cases of translating a word as mob, were they positive? Nope. Nope. Absolutely not. With both, the, quote, "especially one that is disorderly and intent on causing trouble or violence," is fully applicable. The mob wanted blood, the blood of God's faithful. Of course, whether the word mob is used or not, those two aren't the only times that a, quote, "a large crowd of people," unquote, was, quote, "disorderly intent on causing trouble or violence," unquote. And this week, after the daily Bible reading inspired me on Wednesday to write this sermon, the first thing that came to mind when it came to mobs was Sodom and Gomorrah. Sodom and Gomorrah. Two angels come down to see if things are as bad as reported. And Lot, a righteous man, convinces them to stay at his place versus sleeping in the town square. I think Strasbourg is pretty safe, but I still wouldn't want to, if we had one, sleep in the town square. So he convinces them to sleep at his place instead. And we join Lot and the angels right after supper. If you turn to Genesis 19, 4 through 5. Genesis 19, 4 through 5. Genesis 19, verses 4 and 5. So they've had supper, and then... "But before they lay down, the men of the city, the men of Sodom, both young and old, all the people to the last man, surrounded the house. And they called to Lot, 'Where are the men who came with you tonight? Bring them out to us, that we may know them.'" Okay, kids, by our standards, "know them" is a euphemism, which is to say it means something different than it appears. I'm not going to say what that is. But trust me when I do tell you, Lily, that they were, quote, "intent on causing trouble or violence." And everybody, were they a mob? Do they fit the definition of a mob? Since it speaks of, quote, "all the people to the last man," it was a large group. It was a mob, yes. A mob intent on causing trouble, not trouble or violence, trouble and violence. And then during the week, as I continued to ponder the whole question of mobs, I wondered if there were any biblical examples of a good mob. A case where, because we've said that definitionally, we generally think of it as negative, but a large group of people could be a mob. Were there any good mobs? Cases where a whole bunch of people intent on a purpose could be seen in a positive sense. Let's see if you agree with this example I found. Short preamble is that, and if you want to turn as I'm doing this, go to Exodus 24. We're going to look at verses 1 through 5. Exodus 24, 1 through 5. But the short preamble is this, that through Moses, God gave the Israelites all kinds of rules to follow. Now it's time to find out if they'll obey them. So let me turn there, Exodus 24, 1 through 5. And if you're caught up on your reading this year, you've read this week, 24. And we're looking at 1 through 5. "Then he said to Moses, 'Come up to the Lord, you and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel, and worship from afar. Moses alone shall come near the Lord, but the others shall not come near, and the people shall not come up with him.' Moses came and told the people all the words of the Lord and all the rules. And all the people answered with one voice and said, listen, all the words that the Lord has spoken, we will do. All of the words that the Lord has spoken, we will do. And Moses wrote down all the words of the Lord. He rose early in the morning and built an altar at the foot of the mountain and 12 pillars according to the 12 tribes of Israel. And he sent young men of the people of Israel who offered burnt offerings and sacrificed peace offerings of oxen to the Lord. Does that sound like a positive mob? In that case, they all got together and said, yeah, we'll do it. Sounds like a positive mob. They promised to follow all God's commandments. And then a bunch of them did what? They offered sacrifices. They offered burnt offerings and sacrificed peace offerings. Kudos to them. However, after that, and I put this in quotes, good mob made those promises, Moses went up to Mount Sinai, received a lot more instruction from the Lord for that new nation. And then let's go ahead and return to them waiting for Moses. This is in Exodus 32, verse 1. Exodus 32, verse 1. And I got to stop closing my Bible, especially when I know that it's just going to be a little later in the same book. Exodus 32, verse 1. When the people saw that Moses delayed to come down from the mountain, the people gathered themselves together to Aaron and said to him, up, make us gods who shall go before us. As for this Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him. Now, if we read the very last verse of Exodus 24, where we were before, we'd know exactly how long Moses was up there. It says, Moses entered the cloud and went up on the mountain. And Moses was on the mountain 40 days and 40 nights. And Deuteronomy 9:9 tells us that Moses did not eat or drink when he was up there. Didn't eat or drink when he was up there. So for him, I think we can all agree that was quite a period of time. But for the people, was it really that horribly long? 40 days, 40 nights? No, Lily, if you're shaking your head, no, you're right. It wasn't. Don't get me wrong. I can understand the concern a bit. When my wife leaves longer than I expect, I get a little antsy. But regardless, does that excuse that those who said, quote, with one voice, unquote, all the words that the Lord has spoken we will do, as a good mob, flipping so thickly to asking Aaron to, quote, make us gods who shall go before us, unquote. Does Moses' delay make that okay? Of course not. Of course not. Back in Exodus 20, they were told not to have any other gods before him and not to make any idols to worship. But Moses disappears for a month and a week-ish, and they do both. Here, let's... Yeah. Hey, guys. Come on in. Good morning.
11:30.
Oh, that's quite all right. Just glad to have you here. And let's make sure, though, that you don't leave without getting communion, okay? It's important. Come on in.
So sorry, guys.
You don't have to apologize. It's quite all right. Hey, how are you, Anthony?
Good.
Nice little... So just to catch up so you understand where we are, we're talking about mobs. And we've talked about how mobs are generally, the connotation is that they're bad. That if somebody says you were part of a mob, it means that it was a large group and you probably did something bad. But theoretically, it just has to be a large group of people probably intent on doing something. And it's not like watching a concert or something, but you want to cause some change or whatever. So it's a large group of people. So then we looked at the only two times the ESV actually translates a word as mob, and they were in Acts, and both of them, would everybody agree, were bad mobs. intent on doing bad. Then the question is, are there any good mobs in the Bible? And so we went to the case where after Moses gave all kinds of rules to the Israelites, they all said in one voice that they would obey. And we said, oh, that's a good mob then. But, of course, there's always a however, right? But then we run into the situation where, so Moses does that. They say that they're going to follow all the commandments. They sacrifice to God. Good mob. Good stuff. Then Moses goes away for 40 days. 40 days, and what do? They get Aaron to make a golden calf. And that catches you up. See, everybody else is regretting it. They wish they had the Cliff Notes version too. You're totally caught up now. And so I was saying, even if we look at Moses' delay, which was only 40 days, even if we look at Moses' delay as concerning, does that excuse those people so quickly switching from one voice saying, we'll do everything you obey, to asking Aaron to make a golden calf? And I said, of course not. Because Exodus 20 says, you'll put no other gods before me. And it also says, you won't make any idols. And they did both. Just because Moses disappeared for a month and a weekish. Not only that, but continuing, let's go there in Exodus. We're going to do chapter 32, verses 22 through 24. Exodus 32, 22 through 24. Exodus 32, verses 22 through 24. And Moses said to Aaron, what did this people do to you that you have brought such a great sin upon them? Interesting question. And Aaron said, let not the anger of my Lord burn hot. You know these people. They are set on evil. For they said to me, make us gods who shall go before us. As for this Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him. And I said to them, let any who have gold take it off. So they gave it to me, and I threw it into the fire, and out came a calf. I love the expression on your face, Lisa. And out came a calf. Okay, that last verse shows that Aaron was a big fat liar. No question, Aaron was a big fat liar. But I suspect he was accurate in saying the people were set on evil. The people were set on evil. My point is this. We can say that back in Exodus 24 they were a good mob. But did they really mean what they said? Did they really mean what they said? No! Perhaps not all, but many, and I would suggest probably most, were just going along with the mob. The mob wanted to do something, they were moved by words to do something good, so they went along with the mob and said, yes, we'll follow all your rules. Thus, it wasn't really a good mob. Because even back then, they were set on evil. My take is this, that mobs are never, basically never good. That's my take. That even if their voice and actions have good consequences at a given time, the fact that they are driven by the, you've heard this expression, mob mentality, the fact that they are driven by the mob mentality versus being truly committed to good means it is bad. Does that make sense? That it can't be a good mob as a whole because the mob moves because of the mob mentality, and the fact that that is what drives them versus a true commitment to good, a true good commitment to doing good in a good way, means that they are bad. And, please listen to these words, and if we encourage a mob mentality for good, someone just as easily can encourage those same people into a mob mentality for evil. Let me repeat that one more time. Make sure everybody really thinks about it. If we encourage a mob mentality for good, someone can just as easily encourage those same people into a mob mentality for bad. that make sense to you, Lily? I've talked about it up here. I've told you that I think I'm a pretty trustworthy guy. And so as a whole, I think when I preach up here, what I preach is accurate. But I've said, don't believe it just because I preach it. Because if that's why you believe something, then somebody else will stand up in the future and you'll believe it because they preach it. And the Bible says that the devil comes as an angel of light, doesn't it? So same thing with mob mentalities. It doesn't matter if what you're doing with the mob is good. If you're doing it because of the mob mentality, it is not good. And somebody can twist it. What can be twisted for good can be twisted for evil. At this point, I have given four clearly bad mob situations. Wait, I got to check on this one. Either three or four. You say, boy, this is bad. I'm going to have to think about my math. Is anybody even paying attention? How many bad mob situations have I given? Okay. Go ahead. We got the one we just went over. We have the two in Acts. So is it just three? Three? I don't know why when I was writing these notes that I thought it was four. Oh, I gave you Sodom and Gomorrah. Four. So four truly bad mob situations. You remember the mob situations in Sodom and Gomorrah where they asked for the angels so they could, quote unquote, get to know them. And I've given you one that we can argue about after church. You can continue to think that when they all said in one voice that they would follow the commands of the Lord, that that's a good mob. I would say that's probably actually a fifth bad mob because they didn't mean it. But I have not specifically shared a command from God about mobs. Let's try to do that right now. The verse that inspired this whole sermon was Exodus 23, verse 2. Exodus 23, verse 2. And since our kids are reading through the Bible in the New International Reader's Version, you've got that right. Did you bring it? Oh, you're using the phone. Very, very... Well, either way, at home, if you look in your Bible that we got you, you'll see this. So it was Exodus 23, verse 2. This is what inspired this sermon. I was going to do one called When You Pray. Maybe that'll do that next week. So Exodus 23, verse 2. But you'll notice, by the way, Cisco, notice how big the print in my version is? Because you're young and you've got better eyes than I do. 23, verse 2. Are we there? Do not follow the crowd when they do what is wrong. When you are a witness in court, do not turn what is right into what is wrong. Do not go along with the crowd. Is that how your version translates it? Probably not exactly, maybe similar. So here's some alternate wordings. The ESV says, you shall not fall in with many to do evil, nor shall you bear witness in a lawsuit, siding with the many, so as to pervert justice. King James Version, thou shalt not follow a multitude to do evil, neither shalt thou speak in a cause to decline after many to wrest judgment. That was perfectly clear, wasn't it? New Revised Standard Version, you shall not follow a majority in wrongdoing. When you bear witness in a lawsuit, you shall not side with a majority so as to pervert justice. New International Version, do not follow the crowd in doing wrong. When you give testimony in a lawsuit, do not pervert justice by siding with the crowd. Common English Bible, don't take sides with important people to do wrong. When you act as a witness, don't stretch the truth to favor important people. New Century Version, you must not do wrong just because everyone else is doing it. If you are a witness in court, you must not ruin a fair trial. You must not tell lies just because everyone else is. And finally, the Living Bible, don't join mobs intent on evil. When on the witness stand, don't be swayed in your testimony by the mood of the majority present. Now, the Living Bible is more of a paraphrase than a translation, but considering the name of the sermon, you can understand why I like the word mob in it, because it talks about a mob. However, all of them, the Common English Bible, which spoke about important people versus crowds, that's kind of an outlier. I just thought it was interesting. That's why I included it. But all of these provide a couple principles, regardless of the wording, that we can take out of them. Number one, Don't join mobs intent on evil. Do we agree with that? That principle was in all of them? Don't join mobs intent on doing evil. Number two, do not pervert justice by siding with the mob. Do not pervert justice by siding with a mob. Agreed? Those both fair to take out of there? Okay, I could see you saying, Alan, I would never, ever, 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 ever join an evil mob, especially in person, so I am in no danger. Zero zip, nada. Zero danger of breaking Exodus 23:2. And I would say, good for you. But last week we spoke about how with Scripture, it's not a manual with rules for each and every situation. Instead, more often than not, we have to apply its principles, and we just talked about two. We have to apply its principles to modern circumstances. And having said that, how many here use social media? Like Facebook, Twitter, Instagram? No? You guys are probably very wise. Those of you who have used social media, have you ever been part of a large crowd? Those words from the definition. Have you ever been part of a large crowd reposting, retweeting, posting, or tweeting about some terrible thing that someone else has supposedly done? Have you ever done that?
Nope.
Nope. Well, you guys already said you're not on social media. But those who have been on social media, have you ever done that? Somebody does something horrible, so man, you're retweeting it, you're reposting it, you're putting your 2 cents in. Have you done that? What is another word for a large crowd? Mob. Have you ever been, then, part of an internet mob? I have. I'll admit it. I'm not proudly admitting it, but I'll admit it. Why, Alan? Or wait, Alan, you might say. But I always check all my facts before doing so that I am never, ever, ever, ever part of a large crowd of people, especially one that is disorderly and intent on causing trouble or violence. I'm never part of that. And I would say, well, congratulations to you. Awesome. However, did you listen to both principles that I said we could get from those verses? To both principles? Don't join mobs intent on doing evil. Number two was what? Do not pervert justice by siding with a mob. Do not pervert justice by siding with a mob. And you can technically satisfy the first principle by only joining, and I put these in quotes, good, because I'm not sure there are good, but good mobs. But I believe you will always pervert justice by siding with a social media mob that is condemning wrong, even when it is truly wrong. I believe that you will almost always pervert justice by siding with a social media mob that is condemning wrong, even when it is truly wrong. How many people have heard of Justine Sacco, or Sacco, S-A-C-C-O? Anybody heard of her? Justine, notice the tense of this word I'm about to use, was a public relations executive for Interactive Corporation, or Interactive Corp, a company who owns some pretty big websites. Back in 2013, before she climbed on an 11-hour flight to South Africa, she thought she'd be funny with her tweets. To quote John Ronson's article, How One Stupid Tweet Blew Up on Justine Sacco's Life, this is from that article, "We're German, dude. You're in first class. It's 2014. Get some deodorant. Inner monologue as I inhale BO. Thank God for pharmaceuticals." Then during her layover at Heathrow, chili, cucumber sandwiches, bad teeth, back in London. And on December 20, before her final leg of her trip to Cape Town, "Going to Africa. Hope I don't get AIDS. Just kidding. I am white." Your reaction was appropriate, Deb. A little further, this is continuing in the article. She chuckled to herself as she pressed send on that last one, then wandered around Heathrow's international terminal for half an hour, sporadically checking her phone. No one replied, which didn't surprise her. She only had 170 Twitter followers. Just 170. Heck, I had more than that. Guess what happened to that single tweet by a relatively unknown person? in Twitterverse. Back to Ronson's article. By the time Sacco had touched down, tens of thousands of angry tweets had been sent in response to her joke. Hannah, meanwhile, frantically deleted her friend's tweet in her account. Sacco didn't want to look, but it was far too late. Quote, sorry at Justine Sacco, wrote one Twitter user. Your tweet lives on forever. It blew up. That single tweet blew up. In her ill-advised attempt at humor, had her damned from all corners of the earth. As Ronson wrote, going back to his article, this is a little earlier in the article, last thing we read, Sacco's Twitter feed had become a horror show. Quote, in light of at Justine Sacco's disgusting racist tweet, I'm donating to at care today. And, quote, how did Justine at Justine Sacco get a PR job? Her level of racist ignorance belongs on Fox News. Hashtag AIDS can affect anyone, unquote. And, quote, I am an IAC employee, and I don't want at Justine Sacco doing any communications on our behalf ever again, ever, unquote. And from her former employer, IAC, the corporate owner, of the Daily Beast, OkCupid, and Vimeo, quote, this is an outrageous, offensive comment. Employee in question currently unreachable on an international flight, unquote. The anger soon turned into excitement, quote, all I want for Christmas, this was during the holidays, understand this too, she's going to visit family for the holidays. All I want for Christmas is to see at Justine Sacco's face when her plane lands and she checks her inbox voicemail, unquote. And, quote, oh, man, at Justine Sacco is going to have the most painful phone-turning-on moment ever when her plane lands, unquote. And, quote, we are about to watch at Justine Sacco or this at Justine Sacco B-word get fired in real time, real all caps, before she even, all caps, knows she is getting fired. And sure enough, I don't think it was the same day, sure enough, she got fired. Let me ask you, was Justine Sacco's tweet bad? Everybody agree? It was horrible. Even the two before it, she was insulting people. Guy with BO and then the teeth of, although I've told the teeth joke before. My point is, her tweets were tasteless. Her last tweet was horrible. Should she have tweeted it? No, she should not have tweeted it. Ignoring how they went about it, were people correct in condemning the tweet? Yeah. Final question. Did Justine get justice? I heard a voice. What did the voice say? Did Justine get justice? You were right. I think it was Cisco. No, she did not get justice. How could she? The Twitter world had damned her when she couldn't defend herself, apologize, or otherwise respond. Justine did not get justice. And do you remember those two principles from Exodus 23, verse 2? Number one, don't join mobs intent on doing evil. And number two, do not pervert justice by siding with a mob. Do not pervert justice by siding with a mob. And as I said, I believe you almost always will pervert justice siding with a social media mob that is condemning a wrong, even when it truly is a wrong. And this truly was a wrong. She should have never tweeted it. What Justine tweeted was truly a wrong, but Justine did not get justice. Now, I am somebody who says that it's better to base doctrines on more than one verse. And the only straight-up mob verse where it talks about what you should and shouldn't do in a mob that I could find was Exodus 23, verse 2. There might be more, but it really doesn't matter. There are plenty of verses. Would you agree with this statement? There are plenty of verses about not doing wrong and about not perverting justice. The Bible's filled with those. Do not pervert justice. Mob or no mob, regardless of whether it's a person who has 172 followers or 172 million, you should not pervert justice. And I think that last one's important. Just because some famous person says something stupid, it's no better to use a social media mob against them than it would be against somebody with 172 followers like Justine. And of course, have you heard this expression? There but for the grace of God go I? No. Has anybody ever heard of that? No, you haven't? Well, what it means, basically, Cisco, is that we especially should be considerate of the fact that often those we are watching, we do it too. There, but for the grace of God, go I. How many people here have said something wrong, stupidly wrong? I've said something wrong, stupidly wrong. How many people here have said something wrong on social media? Stupidly wrong on social media. Now, if you don't use it, like you said, I can understand it. But again, my guess is if you've used social media for a while, you've actually said something pretty stupid on there. And if you don't think you have, you're either unrepentant in your sin, foolishly ignorant, or don't use social media at least much. Because ultimately, when we yak a lot, sooner or later we say something stupid. It is the essence, social media is the essence of a mob mentality. It encourages wrong and stupidity. That's how it works. Matthew 7:12 says this, "So whatever you wish that others would do to you, do also to them, for this is the law and the prophets." If you do say something wrong, stupidly wrong, on the internet, would you want an angry social media mob coming after you? No. Would you like them to show some patience, some forgiveness? Yeah. So whatever you wish that others do to you, do also to them. For this is the law and the prophets. Listen to our Lord Jesus Christ. Whatever you wish that others would do to you, do to them. Listen to Jesus. Follow Jesus. Be like Jesus. When the mob comes, don't join it. Give the next Justine justice.